You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to Narcotics Bureau. A vicious criminal has resumed operations in your city. His profession, dealer in narcotics. You know his name. You know he's guilty. Your job, prove it.
If you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima. Fatima is the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild. And that's why Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette. That's why Fatima has more than doubled its smokers, coast to coast. So, if you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, January 21st. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of Narcotics Bureau. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, Chief of Detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back into work, and it was 3:49 p.m. when I got to the main lobby of the City Hall, public phone booth. This is Joe.
Joseph, you said you were going to be home at 4 o'clock.
Oh, I couldn't help it, Ma. They changed the schedule. I got my stuff all right. Thanks for packing it.
Well, I put your socks and your clean T-shirts on the bed. Did you put them in your bag?
Yeah, I got them.
Got them off the clothesline right after you called. They weren't quite dry, or I would have packed them for you.
I got them all right. Listen, Ma, I'll call you whenever I get the chance, and I don't worry.
How long are you going to be gone?
I haven't any idea. Maybe a month. All depends.
How can I get in touch with you?
You can't. Call Ben. He'll get the message to me somehow.
Where is it you're going, Joseph?
Well, I'm not going anyplace, Ma. I'll be right here in the city, but I just won't be able to come home for a little while. It's a special job.
Oh, like the last time.
Yeah.
Well, you be careful now. Watch what you order when you're eating out in those awful restaurants.
Yes.
And get your rest.
Yes,
you
ma'am.
Need plenty of rest.
Yeah, okay, Ma. I'll be all right.
I was shopping today. I bought a nice loin roast for dinner tomorrow night. Now you won't be here.
Well, why don't you invite the neighbors over, the Newtons? That'd be good company for you.
Maybe I'll ask your Aunt Elizabeth over.
Yeah. Now, don't worry. If you want to get in touch with me, you deliver the message to Ben, okay?
Yes. All right. What kind of work you be doing? It's going to be dangerous?
Oh, it's just another job, Ma. It'll work out. I'll call you when I can.
All right, Joseph. And be careful now. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, you too. Goodbye, Ma.
All right, Joseph. Bye.
I left the phone booth and started down the corridor. I went up a short flight of stairs and turned left. The afternoon crowd in the City Hall seemed heavier than usual. I walked past the elevators and turned right down another corridor. It was 3:58 p.m. when I got to room 24, Narcotics Bureau. Captain White?
Hi, Joe.
You want to take these?
Yeah, sure.
It's my badge.
Okay.
There's all my identification and my gun.
Right. I'll take care of them for you.
These clothes look all right?
Just a minute. Now, let's see. Yeah. I don't like that tie. Romero?
Yes, Gibber?
Let's see your tie. Yeah, swap with Friday, will you, Ben?
Oh, Christmas tie's pretty loud.
Mine's not.
That's the idea. Here. Here's some stuff to carry in your pocket. Social Security card, ID card, all made out to Joe Kyber.
Mm-hmm.
Some book matches from St. Louis, a couple from Reno, Nevada.
Okay.
You pick up another gun?
I loaned him my 25 automatic.
It's small. It's easy to carry.
Suit yourself. I don't have to tell you to be careful.
No.
It's a chance we've been waiting for, Joe. A lot depends on you.
I'll do what I can.
Just one thing I want to tell you. Take your time. Take all the time you need. Don't push it.
I understand. No time limit.
Your time's up when they find out who you are.
Captain Lynn White and I left the Narcotics Bureau together with Ben and Johnny Bingham. We went down the hall to the office of Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. As in most major narcotic cases, the plan involved the coordinated work of all three offices, the federal, state, and our own local bureau. The operation involved a great many men and a lot of time. When we got to the Chief of Detectives' office, two men were with him. Bill Craig, the agent in charge of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics for the Southern California area, and Inspector Virgil Beckner, head of the State Narcotics Bureau for our district. All of us had one common goal, the apprehension and conviction of two men, Arthur Belmont and Ralph Costello. The first man on the list, Ralph Costello. Chief Brown outlined the overall plan.
Craig, your federal men have been tracking Costello off and on for 3 years now. Bex, over your state agents. Same for our men.
This time we can't afford to miss.
You figure an undercover man working locally? Is that right, Chief?
Yeah, Craig. You start right from the bottom, work up the line till he gets to Costello, if he gets there. Beck?
Where are you going to start?
Kevin White, would you lay it out for Beck and Craig?
Yeah. Friday here is going to handle the job. He's got his full instructions. Joe, you want to fill him in?
All right. I'll make my first contact tonight. I'll meet in a bar down on South Pico with another one of our undercover men, Benny Arredondo. He'll introduce me as Joe Kyber to one of his informants. The informant is supposed to help get me into the Flats gang.
The same bunch running on the south end of town?
Yeah, small-time peddlers. Be curious. A little bit of everything. Go on, Friday.
When I get in the gang, I run with them until I find out where and how they make their buys.
After you get a contact, you make buys all the way up the line and get as close as you can to the top.
Yeah, that's right.
You worked out your contact with us?
He knows that under no conditions will he be seen around the department here.
It's been set up that I have a hotel room lined up down on the east side. Romero here and Captain White will be my only contact with the office. I'll be using the name Joe Kyber.
Sounds all right to me. How about you, Craig?
How about that informant Friday? Can you count on him?
Arredondo thinks a lot of him. He says he's a good man.
He's the first rung on the ladder. He's got to be solid.
Well, if he's not, we won't have far to fall.
Depends on how you look at it. You can kill yourself in the bathtub.
8 p.m. Thursday, January 21st. I checked in at the Casino Hotel on Terminal Street. I registered as Joe Kyber, Omaha, Nebraska. I was given the key for room 5. The rent was $7 a week. I unpacked a few things I had in my bag, went down the hall, and took a shower. I went down to the lunchroom on the corner. I had an egg sandwich and a cup of coffee. It was 11:18 p.m. when I walked into Blue Wright's Bar and Grill. I ordered a beer and sat down. I watched the missing persons program on the television set above the bar.
Lose somebody, Kyber?
Hello, Benny.
Been here long?
I just got here. Where's your boy?
Sitting over there with that fella in the blue suit. Name's Gene.
Who is the guy in the blue suit?
One of the Flats gang.
Hmm.
Gene's lining up your introduction now. Guy's name is Ludwig. They call him Lud. He knows me as Steve.
Right. What do we do?
Sit tight till Gene gives us the word. The tie of yours looks like it's on fire.
Look all right?
I wouldn't wear it. Lud would. Get in the hotel, okay?
Yeah, all set. Room 5.
Gene wants us. Let's go.
Okay.
Hi, Steve. See, your boy got here.
Yeah. Gene, meet Joe Kyber.
Hi.
This is Lud. Joe Kyber? Lud.
Sit down. You like the fights, Kyber?
Yeah. They got nothing out here in that line. I used to go to the garden when I was east.
They got some fine cards at the Legion.
Where?
Hollywood Legion, Friday night. Some classy-looking fighters out there.
Where is that?
Out in Hollywood. Nice little stadium.
I'd like to go with you sometime.
Tomorrow?
I got a date. Maybe next week.
Bring her along. A lot of women go.
Not this one.
Okay.
Are you guys hungry?
I could eat.
Yeah.
Joe?
Sure. How about here?
Nobody eats here.
That steam table over there, the stuff smells pretty good.
So does garbage if the wind's blowing the other way. Let's get a French-tip sandwich, huh?
How about Galbraith over on Sotelo?
Okay. How about you guys?
Sure.
Well, let's go. All right. You from the east, Kiber?
Omaha, Memphis, all around.
Yeah. You don't talk very much.
You do.
You talk tough. Are you tough?
Sometimes.
This place we're going to go eat, sometimes the meat's tough, too.
Yeah?
Just like a piece of tough meat, you can always cut it down to size.
The following week at the fights, I met some of the other members of the Flats gang. They were a typical group of hoodlums. Unlike fiction writers have portrayed them, generally gangs of this type do not operate under a gang leader. Each member considers himself the best of the lot. For all practical purposes, they didn't need a leader. But as in any group, some men are more dominant than others. Ludd was one of these. Because of his tough manner, I observed that the gang members placed confidence in Ludd. It was then that I decided that I had to be tougher than he was if the gang was going to accept me. 5 weeks went by, March 7th. There was still no mention by any of them that they were either using or dealing in narcotics.
Come on in, Kiber. Sit down.
Ludd?
Kiber, meet Jerry Phil.
Hi. I picked up the tickets for the basketball game tonight.
Good seats?
Yeah, they look okay.
Got an extra, Ducky? Maybe I tag along.
Yeah, we got four.
You look kind of sad, Kiber.
He always looks that way. First he was tough, now he's sad.
Oh, you and that mouth. You know it all, don't you?
No offense. You look a little low.
I don't know about you, Kiber, but I'm a little under par. I'm going to have myself a pop. You interested?
No, I don't use it.
Why don't you try it? You might get a kick out of it.
I have. It's all right going up, but it's nothing coming down.
That's where you make a mistake. Stay up. Don't come down. Hello.
You heard what he said, Jerry. You don't like it.
How does he know? He never stayed up long enough.
Take your pop and shut up.
You talk about Kiber trying to be tough. You think you're the big wheel around here.
That's enough.
You ought to quit giving orders, Ludd. You know better than the rest.
Look, little man, knock off that kind of talk and keep us both happy.
Sure. The boss, man.
You know, I got one positive way to shut you up.
Why don't you two quit it?
This concerns me and Fell. You keep your mouth shut.
Well, don't get mad at me. I only wanted to save an argument.
Can it, I say?
Now, look, big mouth, you can push Fell around, but not me.
Now you're playing the tough guy again, ain't you?
Why don't you go over there and sit down, huh?
You set me down, punk.
All right, now listen to me, both of you. I'm tired of being talked down to like a junior member of the firm. You either treat me equal or leave me alone. You understand?
You had it coming, Ludd.
Yeah.
I'd put that bottle down, Ludd.
Where'd you get that gun? You carry that thing right along?
Right along. Put it down, Ludd.
Okay. I'm long on memory, Kiber. Remember that?
Yeah, and I'm real short on patience with you.
Well, I still ain't had my pop. Better hurry. I don't want to miss the game. You got good seats, eh, Kiber? They're not too low. I can't see nothing if they're too low.
Don't worry. You'll be high enough. 2 months went by. By playing the tough guy, I gained a great deal of prestige in the eyes of the other gang members. Jerry Fell made sure that all the members heard about that episode up in Ludd's room. Dealers and users of narcotics rarely carry guns. The members of the Flats gang were small-time peddlers and users. They're referred to as mules or small fry. When they found that I carried a gun at all times, they were impressed. They considered me one of them. Since the very beginning of my undercover work, I met weekly with Ben Romero and Captain Lynn White of the Narcotics Bureau. I would be picked up at a different location each time, making sure that I wasn't followed, and we would remain in the car and drive around in a remote section of the city discussing my progress with the gang. During this first three-month period, under the pretext that I had clients to furnish, I made two small narcotics buys, one for $13 and one for $8. As soon as the purchases were made, I would mark them for identification, contact Ben, and then turn the narcotics over to him to be booked as evidence by the property clerk at Central Division. Another month went by. Thursday, June 5th, 11 p.m. We had just returned from the midget auto races, and we were sitting around in Ludd's room.
You mentioned something out at the races, Kiber. Now what's on your mind?
I told you, Ludd, I need a half a dozen caps right away. I got people putting the bite on me. Old customers.
How old can they be? Only been out here 5 months, remember?
When they're hooked, they get to be old customers in a month.
I fixed up two buys with Morse for you. Tony says he can't handle anymore. Hasn't got enough around. You got on board late, you know. All of us are ahead of you.
Tony can get more. Who's his source?
A couple of guys. I know him.
How about an office to one of them?
You deal with Tony.
You said he hasn't got enough.
That's right, I did.
Okay, how much do you want?
They're your customers. What's it worth?
They'll pay. What's the guy's name?
Costello's one of them. He'll have enough for you.
Who's the other guy?
He'll deal with Costello for now.
Where can I meet him?
Morse will set it up for you. I gotta meet him now, huh? Come in.
Police officers. Shake it down, Donahoe.
What's the trouble?
Checking for a robbery suspect. Find anything, George?
Room's clean.
We don't know anything about a heist.
You'll have to come downtown and answer a few questions. What's the matter with you, fella? You look like we spoiled your party.
Yeah, you spoiled it.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action. Now, here's an authentic report from Fatima Cigarettes.
In 1949, Fatima more than doubled its smokers from coast to coast.
In 1950, enjoy Fatima yourself.
You'll find Fatima extra mild.
Because Fatima is the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild.
You'll find Fatima tastes much better.
Fatima's superb blend gives you a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette.
You'll find Fatima best in cigarette quality.
Fatima has always stood for the best in cigarette quality. For a new year of greater smoking enjoyment, buy Fatima in the appealing golden yellow package. You'll agree, Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
The chance of my being picked up while working on an undercover assignment was one which all of us had considered, since only a handful of men out of some 5,000 working police officers in the department knew anything about our narcotics investigation. We knew that such an occurrence was not impossible. It's one of the chances we had to take. In this instance, we lost, and the critical meeting with one of the men we were after was forestalled. How long our detention at police headquarters would delay my meeting with Ralph Costello was anybody's guess. Could mean weeks or maybe months. I was booked on suspicion of 211 PC, robbery. So was Ludd. The next afternoon, I was taken from cell block 10D2 to the interrogation room.
Come on in and sit down, Kiber. How are you, Friday?
It was a tight squeeze.
The booking number's been canceled, Joe. Print's been stopped.
Those two men from robbery who pulled me in, Wynn and Donahoe, I thought I was in trouble for a minute.
They had no idea you were in that room. Once they got up there, they had to follow through.
Well, they played it right. They remembered their etiquette.
If either one of them had said hello before you did, you might have been in big trouble.
Well, I'm in big trouble anyway. I had a meet all set with Costello. Almost set, anyway.
Just a case of bad timing in that pickup, huh?
Well, if they'd have got there 2 hours later, it might have been different.
Well, how do you stand now? How close are you to Costello?
I need some more money. I got to pay off Ludd.
And he'll take you to Costello if you pay the right price?
Yeah. Ludd's working through Morse. You know about him.
Remember, Friday, if there's any questions when you get back to that gang, you were booked for CCW. You're out on bail.
Yeah.
I got you another gun, Joe. 32 automatic. Okay?
Yeah, thanks. I couldn't go back with the same one. What about the federal and state men? How are they doing?
Pretty good. Federal men picked up Costello in Fresno. He was connected with a sale of 6 cans of H.
Mm-hmm. That much heroin up there. No wonder Ludd can afford to hold me up. He knows there's a shortage down here.
Case isn't too strong against him. When it looked definite that we had him, they were going to call you off. He's out on bail.
And Costello's back down here now.
Yeah. Seems like we get our hands on the guy, but we can't hold him. Narcotics in their possession or under their control. That's what the book says. That's the way we got to get him.
We'll get him that way.
It's up to you now, Friday. Stay with it and keep your chin covered.
Well, if you need anything, Joe, call. Your mother's been over at the house for dinner a few times. She's okay.
Thanks. Tell her I'm all right, will you?
Sure. She worries a lot about you, Joe. Anything happened to you, just about kill her.
That makes two of us. I'll see you. Before I left the city hall, Captain White drew out some more money from the Secret Service Fund. This fund is for the sole purpose of undercover work. This latest amount was for the narcotics buy that I hoped to make with Ralph Costello. An hour before I left, Ludd was released on a writ that he had arranged for. Saturday, June 7th, 9 a.m., I checked back into my room at the Casino Hotel. During the 3 weeks that followed, I kept asking Ludd to arrange a meeting for me with Tony Morse, the next man on the ladder on the way up to Costello. Ludd kept stalling me. Another week went by. Captain Lynn White, Ben, and I held our regular weekly meetings. On July 6th, Ludd told me that a meeting with Morse had finally been arranged for 8 p.m. that night. I called Ben and told him I'd meet him and the captain immediately after I talked with Morse. At 8 p.m., following the instructions Ludd had given me, I was in the downstairs waiting room at the subway terminal at 5th and Hill. I was told to wait by the apple vending machine.
Is Excuse me, mister.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Kiber?
Yeah, you Morse?
That's right. Want an apple?
No, thanks.
Well, sit down.
All right.
Now, what'd you have in mind?
I got a couple of $100 to spend. Can you handle it?
Who sent you?
You know who sent me.
Sure I do. I just want to hear you say it.
Lud.
We can handle it. What'd you have in mind?
I said $200 worth. That's 40 caps.
We got it.
None of that Mexican junk. I want European stuff.
You bought before. You'll take what we got.
That last buy I made through Lud, the junk was cut to nothing. I can only use so much milk or sugar, you know.
By the time it got to you, it was probably cut pretty thin. So was the price you paid for it.
I'm not looking for bargains. I pushed to good people. I want good stuff.
You'll do better this time. You're not dealing with Lud. Sure, we cut it. No more than anybody else. Not as much as Lud.
When can I get it?
You got some sick people?
Couple.
Have it for you in an hour.
Where's the meat?
Got a watch?
Yeah.
What time you got?
8:12.
Add a minute. Make it 13 after.
Okay.
An hour from now. 9:13. Meet Lud at Macy in Brooklyn on the corner. He'll tell you what to do.
Will Lud have it?
Meet Lud at 9:13. See you later, Kiber.
Oh, wait a minute. How do I know you're leveling?
How do we know you are?
I went out the front of the subway terminal building. I took a cab down to 7th and Main. I got off and walked into Pop Sherman's bar. I called the office and set up a meeting with Ben and the captain. I ordered a beer, paid for it, left my change in the bar, asked the bartender to watch it, told him I'd be right back. I went out the back way, crossed the alley, and got down to Los Angeles Street. I walked up to 9th and picked up a cab to take me to Fulton and Covina Avenue. I got out and walked 2 blocks. It was 8:41.
Joe?
Hi.
You meet Morse?
Yeah.
Sure nobody tailed you?
I took all the precautions.
And what's the setup?
I'm not sure, and I don't have much time. I'm going to make the buy tonight.
When?
9:13.
You don't have much time. Kind of rushing it, aren't they?
I figured I'd better play along.
Who's the meet with?
Morse told me to meet Lud at Macy in Brooklyn. Said that he'd carry it from there.
Costello in on it?
I don't know. You got it all.
All right. We'll start picking up the flats, gang. Everyone but Lud.
What do you think?
Well, the way I got it figured, Morse is Costello's runner. He checked me out, and as far as I could tell, he thinks I'm okay.
Yeah.
I got a hunch Lud's going to take me to either Morse again or Costello or possibly both. I don't know where the actual meet's going to be.
That means a tail job.
We'll have to pick you up at Macy in Brooklyn and stick with you until after Lud leaves, if he does, and follow through with you.
Figure it wide, Skipper.
Don't worry. I know we're close. What time you got, Romero?
9:10.
Turn down the next block.
Right.
Pull up here, Ben. Here you go, Friday. Keep your chin covered.
Yep.
Hey.
Hello, Phil.
Friends of yours in the car?
Why?
I know them. They ain't friends of mine.
I didn't say I knew them.
I don't know the guy driving, but the other guy, I seen him lots. Just about 4 weeks ago, we all seen him. Huh? That fuzz, white, narcotics man.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've been riding me since they picked me up with a gun.
Won't do, cop. Narcotics man ain't got nothing on you. That was robbery, remember?
They got a make on me from Nebraska. They've been on me ever since I got here.
That figures. You're one of them.
All right, look, Jerry. I'll argue with you later. I'm in a hurry. I gotta meet Lud.
I tag along. I want to see Lud, too.
You gonna spill to Lud about what you think?
Maybe. I figure I owe it to him. I known him a lot longer than you. I know he ain't no cop.
And you're sure that I am?
I know you are. Let's see what Lud thinks.
Yeah. All right, come on. On your feet. Get out. I looked at my watch. It was 9:02. In 15 minutes, I had to meet Lud. I had to hit Jerry Fell. I couldn't take the chance of him getting to Lud before I did. I couldn't leave him. I couldn't take him with me. I pulled him to his feet and half dragged and half carried him 2 blocks before I spotted a patrolman. Hey, officer! Officer, over here!
Yeah, what's the trouble?
I'm Friday, Central Narcotics.
Yeah.
Take this man and get him downtown. Contact Chief Brown. He'll identify me. Serial number 2288, Friday, Narcotics. The suspect's name here is Jerry Fell. You got it?
Yeah, you got some kind of identification?
No, I haven't. Not a thing. This is special duty.
I'm sorry, I don't know you. I have to hold you till I call in.
All right, but hurry, huh?
Call box right here. This is Carlson, box 117. Check on a matter with the Chief of Detectives Brown, will you? Yeah, that's right. Have a man here who identifies himself as Friday. What's your first name?
Joe Friday. Tell him to hurry.
Yeah. Joe Friday, Central Narcotics, serial number 2288. Says he's in a hurry, holding a suspect, Jerry Fell. I'll hold on.
My watch says 9:05. What time you got?
I got 6 minutes after. It might be a little fast.
Any cab stands around here?
Four blocks up the street.
Which way?
That way. Yeah. Okay, I will. Thank you. Okay, Sergeant. Sorry to hold you up. Need any help?
No, you just hang on to this guy. Don't let him go. I started to run. Macy in Brooklyn. Six blocks away, and I had 8 minutes to make it. A narcotics buy is one date you're not late for. Either you're there at the specified time or there's no deal. The veteran narcotics peddler knows that that's the only safe way for him to operate. A minute, one way or the other, could mean an arrest. I ran.
You're out of breath, Kiber. Anything wrong?
No, the cab broke down. I didn't want to be late.
Yeah, you got 40 seconds. That's cutting it pretty thin, but it'll do. Come on.
All right.
Right here.
By this lamppost?
That's it, right in front of it. Don't move to the left or right. Stay put. They'll handle the rest. So long.
Get in, Kiber. Got the money?
Right here.
$200. Here's your package.
Okay.
That's it. Joe Kiber, meet Ralph Costello.
Hi.
Hello.
Out this side, Kiber.
Okay. I'll see you.
Did you make the buy Friday?
Yeah, take him.
Hi, Joe.
Ben, thought you were with the captain.
They don't need me. That intersection's blocked off up there. They're pulling them over right now. See?
Yeah. They got them.
Costello in the car?
Yeah.
And that's half of the team. Now what?
We go after the big man, Arthur Belmont.
Took us 7 months and 4 days to get to Costello. Lots of time.
Yeah. Always seems to work out that way, doesn't it?
What's that?
They always run out of time before we do.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On July 6th at 10:45 p.m., Ralph Costello was taken to the Narcotics Bureau, the interrogation room. In a moment, the results of that interrogation.
It's amazing how many long cigarette smokers are changing to Fatima. Here is the actual report.
From coast to coast, Fatima has more than doubled its smokers.
Yes, more and more smokers every day are discovering that Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
Smokers find Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette.
They find that Fatima is extra mild because it's the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make it extra mild.
Enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself. Best of all long cigarettes. With the promise of the United States District Attorney that his prison terms for the possession and sale of narcotics would run concurrently rather than consecutively, Ralph Costello agreed to furnish us vital information concerning the number one narcotics dealer on the Pacific Coast, Arthur Belmont.
Next week, the big man, Arthur Belmont.
You have just heard Dragnet, a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet from Los Angeles.
Hear Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman in The Halls of Ivy tomorrow evening on NBC. about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent. Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to Narcotics Bureau. For 7 months, you've been working with federal and state agents in breaking a narcotics ring. You've apprehended the small fry. Next in the line, the big man. Your job, get him.
If you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima. Fatima is the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild. And that's why Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette. That's why Fatima has more than doubled its smokers coast to coast. So, if you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, July 9th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of Narcotics Bureau. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way into work, and it was 3:58 p.m. when I got to room 24, Narcotics Bureau.
Hi, Joe. Feel better?
Well, not quite as tired, Ben. That Costello thing was a long haul.
Narcotics Romero. Okay, Bigham. I'll tell him. Meeting's in 5 minutes. Chief Brown's office.
Okay, I want to pick up my stuff from the captain first. Hi, Skipper.
Come on in. You look a little better, Friday. Get some rest.
Yeah, a couple of good meals. That's the trouble with the Flats gang. They never knew where to eat.
Sit down, Joe. I want to talk to you. We got a couple of minutes before the meeting. You'll probably be getting this all up and down the line from here in. Just want to let you know that we think you and all the men in the operation did a fine job.
My part wasn't much. You did more than I did.
Oh, we all worked, but you had the dirty end of it.
Good job.
Here's your equipment. You'll need it now.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Your badge, your ID card, your gun. 6 shells, that's all of it, huh?
Mm-hmm. That's it, thank you.
You're back at it.
Yep.
Here's one for you. Look at this.
What's that you got?
Mug shot of a girl picked up in a narcotics raid last night.
A pretty girl.
Long blonde hair, beautiful eye.
She looks young. High school girl?
She was when that picture was taken, 1947. She was 16. Here, look at this one.
Yeah, same girl.
Yeah, that's the way she looked at 11:30 last night when we picked her up.
She looks 50.
19 years old. 3 years on heroin.
She might as well be dead.
She is. 8 o'clock this morning. Let's go. It's time for the meeting. You just looked at the best reason I know of for getting Belmont.
Did she get her stuff from Belmont?
Costello was pushing to her. He got his stuff from Belmont. They all do.
Well, let's go. Bye, William. Anybody brief you on the Costello interview, Joe?
No, not yet.
Chief Brown will fill you in. Here we are. Chief?
Gentlemen, come on in. Men all know each other.
Sure. Yeah. Hi, Craig.
Captain White, I think you and your men know Policewoman Caswell.
Yes, sir. How are you, Florence?
Hello.
I'm Ms. Caswell, Inspector Virgil Beckner, State Narcotics.
How do you do?
Yeah. Bill Craig, Agent in Charge, Federal Narcotics.
Hello.
How do you do?
Before we get into the Belmont procedure, let's see how we stand on the Costello case. White, do you want to fill everybody in on information we got from Ralph Costello?
Yes, sir. After his arrest Monday night, we interrogated Costello for about 4 hours. We confronted him with the package he sold to Friday here.
How'd the stuff test?
Crime lab ran it through, about a third of an ounce of heroin, fair quality Mexican stuff. The man we picked up with Costello, Tony Morris, was questioned as well. He corroborated Costello's story.
What'd you get from him?
Well, he told us he had a great deal of information on the big man in the operation, Belmont, that he wouldn't tell us a thing unless we made a deal with him.
What kind of a deal?
He wanted everything. But we finally agreed that the only thing we might possibly work out was his prison term.
Mm-hmm.
We called in the U.S. District Attorney. We talked another 4 hours.
How'd it work out?
District Attorney told Costello the only thing he'd do for him was to have his prison terms run concurrently rather than consecutively. Not much to pay for what we got.
Costello gave us enough to enable us to start moving on Belmont right away. We've had his M.O. confirmed. We've got a list of most of his pushers. Now we can get to him.
Any definite plan, Chief?
White and I have been talking it over here with Craig and Beck. We worked out what we think might be a pretty good plan. Craig, do you want to lay out how your men are going to handle it from the federal end?
We'll work from out of town to the center here. We'll check his contacts across the state lines. We've already traced his connections to the east, New York Syndicate. We'll keep working that end.
Beck, how about your state narcotics men?
We'll work inside the state line here. We've already checked out part of his operations. We've located sources in San Francisco, Bakersfield, Fresno, as far south as San Diego, Lower California. We'll draw all those ends up tight. Keep moving.
You fellows will both give us a hand if we need assistance.
You bet.
That's right.
Fine. White, what are we going to do locally?
Oh, it's going to be a case of taking what we know and finding out what we don't know, putting the two together. Seems to me to be a case of watching the man at all times. Belmont shouldn't be able to blow his nose without one of our men knowing it.
It's going to be a tremendous undertaking. You all know the tough job it is shadowing narcotics men. They're fidgety, hypersensitive. They recognize anything out of the ordinary at once.
For that reason, it can't be a one-man operation. Everybody's got to work. Our undercover won't work this time. They're no doubt alerted. So we'll work it from another angle.
When do we start?
We've already started. Belmont lives in Manhattan Beach. His house is under surveillance, has been since yesterday.
Well, I can't impress upon all of you the importance of not letting Belmont out of your sight for an instant. A narcotics buy could be made in 30 seconds. If we're not there at the instant, we lose him.
Do we have anything at all as to when he might be ready to deal again?
Nothing. Nobody seems to know Belmont's exact operating time. Could be any time. And in order to prosecute him, we've got to be there when the narcotics are in his possession or under his control.
So we start to live with him and stay as close as we can without being tapped until there's a buy.
That's it. Captain White has all the assignments for our local men.
Okay. We'll watch him.
And stay close to him. If he makes a move, be there.
The meeting lasted 4 hours. During that 4 hours, a plan was formulated which we hoped would end in the successful apprehension of the number one man in Pacific Coast narcotics traffic, Arthur Z. Belmont. How do you watch a man, his every move, for 24 hours, day in, day out, without his knowing it? How do you watch a man whose very existence depends upon not being watched, who is expertly schooled in every trick and device of police surveillance, whose method of operation will change with the slightest disturbance of his daily routine, and if that M.O. changes, you've lost him? Thursday, July 10th, in the small Los Angeles suburb of Manhattan Beach, population 10,172. Three very ordinary events took place. A public nurse began a house-to-house survey. She asked the simple question, "Have you ever been vaccinated for smallpox?" She started canvassing 27 blocks from the home of Belmont. Policewoman Florence Caswell. Two Japanese gardeners new to the city of Manhattan Beach began soliciting work. They started asking for jobs 38 blocks from the home of Belmont. Sergeant Ten Fujikuni and Patrolman John Kagawa. A team of surveyors driving a station wagon marked with the seal of Los Angeles County began taking linear measurements for the proposed enlargement of storm drains in the area. They started 14 blocks from the home of Belmont. Lieutenant John Bigham, Central Narcotics, Sergeant Ben Romero, and myself.
Okay, Ben, bring in the rod. Let's knock off for lunch.
What do you want to eat, John?
In the wagon. Better take the transfer with us. Kids might pick it up.
Yeah, I got it.
I can't keep the sand out of my shoes.
Might as well get used to it. We're a long ways from home.
Yeah. 9 years on the job is the first time I ever brought my lunch in a paper sack.
Who knows, Joe? This might change your whole way of living.
You bet.
Want to sit in the front?
No, I'm getting back.
Fellas, have a look at the local paper?
No, why?
Manhattan Beach Sentinel, down the bottom of page one in the box. Read it.
Yeah, let me see. Mm-hmm. Well, it's good.
What is it, Joe? Read it out loud.
Well, it says preliminary work on storm drains started. Surveyors. Well, it goes on to say that surveyors have started taking measurements for the new drains.
Mm-hmm. Captain White's idea had the story planted, even got a release from the Planning Commission.
It won't hurt us a bit. Well, you said lunchtime. I've got enough here for the whole department. 4 hard-boiled eggs. See what kind of sandwiches I drew. Deviled egg. Look here. She even put them on egg bread. I hate eggs.
Looks like the captain driving up the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's him.
Driving a city car.
chief engineer.
How's it going, Biggin?
Fine. Slow. Had your lunch?
What do you got?
Deviled egg sandwiches. Got plenty.
Can't stand them.
How about ham and cheese?
Yeah, thanks.
There you go. How's everybody else doing?
Very slow. It takes time. We've got to keep taking our time. If we tip it before we get close enough, Belmont's on his way.
Mm-hmm. How long are we going to have to keep our distance?
Not much longer. We can't take the chance of starting everybody out right on top of Belmont. It might look funny to him. Anybody else would be okay. The average person, your operations might look normal, but we can't afford to try to get it by Belmont that way.
Mm. With a hop cutter, you never know.
It's not so much that we don't know. We just can't take any kind of a chance.
That's what I mean.
He might have started right on Belmont's front lawn, and he's never got wise. But we wouldn't want to risk it.
Belmont been out of his house today?
On the go quite a bit. Left his house at 9:13 a.m., went down to the ShopRite market, bought a half pound of bacon, 2 dozen eggs, loaf of bread, whole wheat. Sergeant Hodges waited on him. He's clerking in the grocery department.
Oh, yeah.
Then he drove over to his neighborhood gas station, got a full tank of ethyl and 2 quarts of oil, 30 weight. Drove home, got back at 9:42.
Are you still there?
Yeah. About time you guys were back at it, huh?
Right. Okay, Ben. You want to grab some of the gear?
Yeah. Hey, Joe.
Hmm?
Give me a leftover bread crust, will you? I'll give them to Seagull.
Yeah, sure. Here you go. Well, foot by foot, we're getting closer to Belmont. Hope nobody tips it.
Nobody should, unless you don't trust those gulls.
We surveyed the city of Manhattan Beach for 5 weeks. Policewoman Caswell, posing as a nurse, continued canvassing. Everybody concerned with the job of standing watch over Arthur Z. Belmont carried out their routine day by day. Daily reports came in from everyone in the operation. These reports would be sifted at Central Narcotics and progress reports compiled for the use of those in the field on the Belmont case. All police cars, as well as city cars, such as we were employing, were equipped with three-way radio communication. All personnel were in constant contact with one another. Wednesday, August 12th, it was the decision of Captain Lynn White that the idea of our posing as city surveyors had been exhausted. Further use of this could possibly arouse suspicion. Belmont lived at 1227 Ocean Avenue. 2 days before we were called off the surveying job, the city leased the private residence at 1216 Ocean Avenue. A vanload of furniture was moved in. Drapes and curtains were hung. Regular deliveries of daily newspapers and milk were made to the house. To all outward appearances, the house was occupied by an average family. Actually, it provided another blind from which we could continue to observe Belmont. Shortwave radio equipment was installed in an upstairs room. Ben and I were assigned the night watch.
Another car just stopped in front of Belmont's house.
How many does that make?
3 cars. Just a minute. Yeah. A couple of guys getting out. Going up the front door.
Where? Let me see, huh?
Take a look. Watch curtain.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Belmont answered the door. He's letting him in.
Something's doing. What do you think?
I don't know. You called Captain White, didn't you?
Oh, an hour ago. Just after the first car pulled up. He'll park in the alley and come up the back way.
Yeah, I better check with everybody again. This portable seemed to warm up slower than our car radio.
About the same.
Here we go. Unit 140K to unit 145K.
145K, go ahead.
Just checking. Your location the same?
That's right. Ocean and Clipper.
We got 3 cars to cover now. Stand by.
Roger.
Unit 140K to 143K.
143K, we got it. Standing by.
Location still good?
Same.
Be talking to you. Stand by. 140K to 149K.
149K. Go ahead.
Stay put. We got 3 cars now.
Yeah, we heard. Still the same spot. Standing by.
Roger.
Captain just pulled into the alley, Joe.
Good.
Belmont's porch light just went out.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. 3 guys came in the first car, 2 in the second, 2 in the third. Is that right?
Yeah, 7 all total. 8 counting Belmont.
Maybe he's running for office.
Joe, Ben, any changes since you called me?
Another car.
Mm-hmm. Anybody you know?
It's too dark to see their faces.
Mm-hmm. Dodge coupe, gray, black package sedan, green Chevy. Well, that might be for me. I told the office they could reach me here. White. Yeah, Bigham. You must be wrong. Be sure he's not lying. All right, thanks. Yeah. You sure Belmont hasn't left his house since you came on duty?
Couldn't possibly. Not without somebody in the details spotting
him. He got out somehow. He made a buy.
Captain White called the office and talked to Benny Arredondo, our narcotics undercover man. He confirmed the fact that somehow Belmont had a meet and successfully completed a narcotics transaction. None of us could figure how, and we didn't know when the meet took place. Arredondo told us that the buy had been made sometime in the past 10 hours. The arresting officers had recovered a portion of the narcotics, two bindles of heroin. They were found in the possession of one of Belmont's runners, Archie Scott.
I can't figure it. What do we do now, Skipper?
Sit tight and watch those three cars in front of Belmont's house over there.
Maybe he didn't have to leave the house to make a buy.
That's the way I got it, Peg. Those cars down there, those the first visitors he's had in the past 24 hours?
As far as anybody knows, we watched it close.
Sometimes it's like that.
Well, looks like somebody's coming out over there.
Two guys.
How many in there?
Eight, counting Belmont.
All right, Friday. Get to the cars.
Yeah. They started to move out yet?
No. Five, six, seven. That's all of them. They're heading for the car.
Yeah. Looks like a three-way switch. We'll see when they start to move out.
Attention, all units and special details. Stand by.
Here's the license numbers, Joe.
Oh, good. I need those. Thanks.
Green Chevy's headed south. Black Packet's going north. So's a Dodge Coupe.
Uh-huh.
Dodge turned left at the corner. It's headed east now.
Got it. 140K to all units and special detail. Unit 149K.
149K. Go ahead.
1946 green Chevrolet sedan, license 61 William 852, headed south on Ocean.
Roger.
Unit 145K.
145K, go ahead.
1947 gray Dodge Coupe, license 1X-Ray 1898, headed east on Clipper Street.
Roger.
143K, come in.
143K, yep.
1939 Black Packard sedan, license 6 Mary 6778, headed north on Ocean.
Roger. Got him spotted.
Could be a dry run. Couldn't afford to chance it either way.
Nothing to do now but wait it out.
That's right, and pray for rain.
It was 8 minutes past 8 p.m. We sat back and waited for the reports to come in from the cars. At 8:25 p.m., 17 minutes after the alert was broadcast, Unit 149K reported in on the gray Chevrolet sedan. The car and its occupants were thoroughly searched. No trace of narcotics was found. 8:42 p.m., 34 minutes after the alert.
Unit 143K to 140K.
143K, go ahead.
On that 1939 Packard sedan, license 6, Mary 6778, shook them down. Nothing, they're clean.
8:50 p.m., 42 minutes after the alert, the report on the third and final car came in, the 1947 gray Dodge Coupe.
That's it. Not a trace of narcotics in any of those three cars. Belmont beat us.
Tough luck. It's going to be tougher. Now he knows we're after him.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action. Now, here's an authentic report from Fatima Cigarettes.
In 1949, Fatima more than doubled its smokers from coast to coast.
In 1950, enjoy Fatima yourself.
You'll find Fatima extra mild.
Because Fatima is the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild.
You'll find Fatima tastes much better.
Fatima's superb blend gives you a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette.
You'll find Fatima best in cigarette quality.
Fatima has always stood for the best in cigarette quality. For a new year of greater smoking enjoyment, buy Fatima in the appealing golden yellow package. You will agree, Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
The three-car switch. Three cars arrive at a given point at different times. The meet takes place. The drivers of the various cars leave the given point at the same time. Each drives away from the point in a different direction, making it three times as difficult to follow them. The practice was not new to the Narcotics Bureau or the dealers in narcotics. It usually includes the dry run, in which the actual mechanics of the narcotics are carried out, but neither the merchandise nor the money is on hand. This practice forces the narcotics officer into pure guesswork. If the officer doesn't follow up, the buy could be successful. If he chooses to follow up, he takes the chance of exposing himself and tipping his hand on a rehearsal. In the case of this particular car switch, we lost. But taken in the car roundup were seven of Belmont's trusted runners. Six of these men refused to talk, but the seventh, Clifford Bissell, gave us a lead to one of Arthur Belmont's most trusted friends. His name was Floyd Ketchell. He and his wife lived at 357 Evergreen Drive, Linwood.
It's a nice house.
Yeah.
Yes?
Police officers, we'd like to ask you a few questions.
What about?
Well, as you probably know, there's been a series of burglaries here in your neighborhood.
No, I didn't know.
Oh, yes, quite a few. Would you mind if we came in and talked to you about it?
I don't know anything about any robberies around here. Everything's okay.
This is just a routine check, Mr. Ketchell. Everybody else in the neighborhood's cooperating. Only take just a minute.
All right, you can come in, but I have to leave in about 15 minutes.
Thank you. Now, you have a nice place here, Mr. Ketchell.
Yes. Now, what was it you wanted me to help you with?
You know a man by the name of Clifford Bissell?
No.
How about Arthur Z. Belmont?
Who?
Arthur Z. Belmont. Bissell says you and Belmont are good friends.
I don't understand this. I thought you wanted to ask me about some robberies. I wonder if you'd mind rolling up your left sleeve. I'd like to look at your arm. What for?
You're a user, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Then you know what we're talking about, don't you?
No, I don't. Do you have any narcotics here in the house?
Certainly not.
You mind if we look around? Why do you want to search the house? Why won't you show us your left arm? Floyd Ketchell would admit nothing, but he allowed us to search his home and grounds. An extra detail of men was called out to aid us in the search. We covered every foot of the acre of ground. This took 2 days. We found nothing. On the third day, under the flooring of an upper bedroom of the Ketchell home, we found Ketchell's plant. He was using heroin.
You want me to call Belmont, is that the idea?
That's right. We want you to set up a meet with him.
I'm not going to rat on Art. He's a friend of mine.
Well, suit yourself. We found your plant there. We've got you. You'll be the fall guy.
You mean I take all the heat?
Why not? Bissell put the finger on you. We got to have somebody.
Why pick on me?
We just told you. We found the stuff here. Bissell fingered you. You're it.
All you have to do is make a phone call. You won't have a clean slate, but it's going to sound a lot better in court.
All right. It makes sense.
You know what to tell him. We've already been over all that. Call him now. Friday, listen in on the extension. If Ketchell changes his mind in the middle of the conversation, I'll see that he hangs up.
Yeah. Hi, Art. Floyd Ketchell.
Hiya, Ketch.
Fine.
How's Edna?
She's fine, Art. Say, I got a friend on his way to Honolulu.
Uh-huh.
He wants to take a little package along. Gotta have it.
You know him? Is he okay?
Yeah. Old friend.
You sure?
Yeah.
Have to be pretty careful. Got hit Wednesday night down the beach.
Yeah? Who'd they get?
Bissell and six guys from New York. Got off easy. It was a dry run.
I didn't know that. Nothing in the papers.
He isn't hit yet. It will. How much do your friend need?
Going to be in the islands for quite a while, so there's a couple ounces should do it.
You got the money now?
He's good. Can you swing it tonight? Boat leaves from San Francisco day after tomorrow.
Hasn't got much time, has he? Okay, you want to pick it up?
Yeah. All right, if I bring him along, I want you to meet him. Good customer.
If you're sure about him, yeah. 8:30 at the store.
We'll be there, Art.
1,100 cash.
Yeah.
Better be okay, kid.
He is.
Better be. I had one dry run this week. I can have another.
3:22 p.m. We took Mr. and Mrs. Floyd Ketchell back to Central Division where they were booked on suspicion of violation of the State Narcotics Act. 4 p.m. We met in the office of Chief of Detectives Thad Brown.
You need $1,100, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
How much was in the Secret Service fund?
$223. Allotment for this month's all gone.
Well, where'd you get the rest of it?
You haven't got it all yet. Romero's the banker. How you got it figured, Ben?
Well, let's see. I've got it all written down here. First off, we got $223 cash. And these fellows all gave us their personal checks. Jack Donahoe and Robert gave us $200. Johnny Begum put up $100. And Captain White's in for $150. Joe put in $35. And $22 is all I can swing.
That's $720. You need $380, right?
Yeah, that's the way I got to figure.
Okay, I think I can make up the rest.
How about Wynn's Cadillac? He'll loan it to you.
He's out getting it washed.
It's 41, isn't it?
Yeah, sedan. A little old, but it looks good when it's washed. Flashy.
Oh, that's what you need. You going to make the buy, Wayne?
Yeah. Ketchell will be with me.
Okay, it's all here. $1,100.
Yeah, we've only got one hitch. It's 5 o'clock and the banks are closed.
Yeah?
Not much time to run around getting checks cashed. It was 5 p.m. We had 3 hours to cash $720 in personal checks. We split up and covered every possible place in the city where we were known and where we knew they would cash them. By 7:45 p.m., we had the $1,100 in cash. The serial number on each bill was listed and the money turned over to Captain White. The scene of the meet was a hardware store on East 9th Street, which Belmont used as a front. Belmont's hardware was located in a small neighborhood shopping district. On Friday nights, the stores remained open until 9 p.m. Promptly at 8:30, Captain White and Floyd Ketchell pulled up in front of the store and went in. Ben and I waited in our car a half a block down the street. It was 8:35.
There they are. They're coming out. Must have made the buy.
Starting the car. Here they come. Watch for the skipper's signal, huh?
Yeah. There it is. Let's go.
Okay, pull over here. Come on.
Is it clerk back there? You see Belmont?
No.
No, sir. Can I help you?
Is Mr. Belmont around?
No, sir. He just stepped out.
You sure?
Yes, sir. He went out the back door not a minute ago.
Bigham and Cassidy are out there, aren't they?
Yeah, he won't go for it.
Oh, there's Mr. Belmont. Mr. Belmont, these gentlemen want to see you.
Running up the stairs to mezzanine.
Come on. All right, Belmont. Wait a minute.
What's that barrel?
Watch it. Look out!
Pushing that barrel down the stairs?
All right. Let's go. Come on.
There he is. He's trying to reach that skylight.
Belmont, get on. You'll never make it.
Slipping, Joe.
Belmont!
Come on.
He didn't do that showcase any good.
Yeah, he's through.
Piece of that glass right through him.
Yeah, it's a rough way to go, isn't
it? Yeah. At least narcotics didn't kill him.
Didn't it?
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On December 10th, 1948, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
It's amazing how many long cigarette smokers are changing to Fatima. Here is the actual report.
From coast to coast, Fatima has more than doubled its smokers.
Yes, more and more smokers every day are discovering that Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
Smokers find Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette.
They find that Fatima is extra mild because it's the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make it extra mild.
Enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself. Best of all long cigarettes. Twelve members of Arthur Z. Belmont's narcotics gang were finally rounded up by federal, state, and local authorities. All 12 were tried and convicted of violating the Harrison Act and the State Narcotics Act. They received sentences as prescribed by law and are now serving their terms in state and federal penitentiaries. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet from Los Angeles.
Be sure to hear Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman in Halls of Ivy tomorrow on NBC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, this program is for you, not your children. The subject is of vital importance to you as parents. This is the story of a vicious man.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. Two small girls are reported missing. Somewhere between their homes and a neighborhood grocery store, they dropped from sight. Your job, find them.
If you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima. Fatima is the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild. And that's why Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette. That's why Fatima has more than doubled its smokers coast to coast. So, if you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, October 27th. It was cloudy in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. We were on the way out from Central Division. It was 16 minutes past 8 p.m. when we got to South Peoria Street. Number 267.
Sure gloomy, huh?
Yeah, it's sultry.
Looks like we're in for some rain.
Yes, sir?
Police officers. Is Lieutenant Barker here?
Yes, you want to come in?
Thank you.
This is Sergeant Romero. I'm Sergeant Friday, Central Homicide.
How are you? My name's Claude Jimerson. Lieutenant Barker's in here, on the phone.
Hi, Captain. Yeah. I'll let you know. Yeah, Romero, Friday.
How's it going, Lieutenant?
Not good. You met Mr. Jimerson?
Oh, sure. Sit down, gentlemen. Would you like some coffee? I can have the wife make some.
No, thank you.
We didn't want to bother the girl's parents any more than we had to. Jimerson here is one of the neighbors. He's been nice enough to let us use his phone.
The kids disappeared about 4 this afternoon, is that right?
At 3:45. Got out a local broadcast on him. Here's a missing report.
Thank you, John. Thelma Griswold, age 11. Barbara Sperry, 7-year-old. You talked to both families.
Yeah. Now, 3:30 this afternoon, Mrs. Griswold sent her daughter to the grocery store down on Sycamore Avenue. It's about 10 blocks from their home. The Sperry girl, a friend of hers, she went with her.
Anybody at the store remember seeing them?
According to the grocery clerk, they were there about 3:45. Mother gave the kids a note. They bought a loaf of white bread, a half pound of bacon, a dozen oranges.
Yeah.
That's right, Sergeant. I hope nothing's happened to the kids. We've been neighbors to the Griswolds for years. Sperry's, too.
Did you notice if the little girls were going in the direction of their home?
Yes, they were. The last time I saw them, they were about a block away, heading straight for home. Little Sperry girl had her dog with her. Champ, I think they call him. He's a collie.
And he's missing, too.
That's right, Joe. Not a trace of the kids or the dog. Juvenile officers from 77th Street have been checking the neighborhood for the past 3 hours.
And are the girls in the habit of wandering off like this?
Parents say no. It's the first time.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks very much, Mr. Jimerson.
Well, not at all, Sergeant. Sure you won't have a cup of coffee?
No, thanks. We don't like to bother you, but we may have to check back with you later tonight. Routine questions.
If I can help out in any way to find those girls, let me know.
Yeah, we'll let you know, gentlemen. Thanks again.
Nice fellow.
Yeah, most of the neighbors we've talked to have been the same, anxious to help. Some of them are out with our juvenile officers now, trying to dig up a lead on the kids.
You check the movie theater and the playgrounds in the neighborhood.
Everything, Joe.
Those some of your men from juvenile, Lieutenant?
Yeah, looks like it. Yeah, Schwartz and Preston.
Lieutenant?
Yeah, Preston, what you got?
Found the kid's dog, the collie.
Where?
Just above Sanchez Drive, up in the hills. Hope it's no indication.
How do you mean?
Dog's dead.
The collie dog was taken to a veterinarian on Jefferson Boulevard to be examined for cause of death. We put in a call to the office, and a special detail of men was assigned to aid in searching the area where the dog was discovered. We got out an all-points bulletin. The fathers of the missing girls and a dozen neighbors joined in the search. With the aid of flashlights, we started from the end of Sanchez Drive, and as best we could, we covered the ground for almost a full mile back into the Sunset Hills. 10:55 p.m. started to thunder. The search went on. The hilly terrain and thick patches of scrub oak didn't make the job any easier. 11:15 p.m. started to rain.
Watch your step, Joe. The rocks are slippery.
Yeah. I can't figure it. Not a sign.
What do you think?
I don't know. Wait a minute. Flash your light over here. No, here.
See something?
I thought I did. Yeah. Scrap of brown paper.
Who's this coming?
Sergeant. Is that you?
Oh, Jimerson? Yeah. What's that you got?
I found it. Right down there, just off the path.
Paper sack.
Look.
Loaf of bread, a few oranges, a package of bacon.
Where'd you find it?
Right down there. Mr. Holmquist and me, we were heading back for the cars when I saw this bag lying to one side of the bush.
We'll take it, Jimerson. Thanks. Let's go, Ben.
That means that Barbara and Thelma were up here today.
You haven't mentioned that to either one of the girls' fathers.
No, I haven't.
Good. They're having a hard enough time as it is.
Friday, Ben, see him for a minute?
Yeah. Excuse us, Mr. Jimerson.
Certainly.
Yeah?
Schwartz and I checked with the vet who examined the dog.
What'd he say?
Says the dog was beaten to death.
We made another attempt to continue the search of the Sunset Hills area for the two missing girls, but the heavy rain and the darkness made the job impossible. The rain had also destroyed the physical evidence at the spot where we had found the grocery bag. We went back to Jimerson's house and called the office again. Another detail of men was assigned to be on hand to help in the search when it resumed at daylight. Chief of Detectives Thad Brown and Captain Harry Elliott of Homicide were notified of late developments. At 25 minutes past midnight, we started to retrace the steps of the two missing girls from the time they left their homes at 3:30 the afternoon before. We covered every foot of ground along the route which the girls reportedly took on their way to the grocery store. We got the grocery clerk out of bed and interviewed him again. We talked with two elderly ladies in the neighborhood who said that they had seen the missing children between 3 and 4 p.m. the previous afternoon. They could add nothing to what Jimerson had already told us. 3:30 a.m. was still raining hard. We drove back to South Peoria Street and sat in the car. The lights were still burning in the homes of the missing youngsters, the Griswolds and the Sperrys. Jimerson asked us in for coffee again. This time we accepted. We went in and sat around the kitchen table. Glenn Chandler and Stendahl from Homicide, Lieutenant Barker, Ben and myself. Jimerson's wife made the coffee. There wasn't much talking.
You want more coffee?
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, Miss Jimerson. That. Thank you.
You want some more?
No, thanks. It's fine.
You want some more coffee?
You got enough, huh?
Sure, Lieutenant. Plenty. Go ahead.
Thanks.
Fill the sugar bowl, will you, Amy? Empty.
There isn't any more. You never do things right. I told you to get some at the store today.
You told me?
Yeah, that's all right, Jimerson. Never use it anyway. Thanks.
Never do anything right.
All right, Amy, go to bed. She's a little upset. Not feeling too well.
Well, I guess we better be going, Jimerson. Thanks.
No, that's all right, Sergeant. She didn't mean you. It's this whole thing, I guess, got everybody on edge.
There's still a chance they may be all right.
How do we explain the bag of groceries we found back in the hills? The dog.
If anybody's hurt those kids, we'll take care of him right here in this neighborhood. He'll get what's coming to him.
Somebody at your back door.
Oh, yes, I'll be.
Sergeant Friday here?
Yes, he's here. Come on in. Sergeant.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What do you got?
Mr. Griswold, Joe. Says he'd like to have you come over and talk to him. Figures he'll make his wife feel better, all broken up.
Sure. Come on, Ben. We'll be over at the Griswolds, Lieutenant.
All right.
Thank you for the coffee, Jimerson. Not at all. If you get a chance, tell Griswold how sorry everybody is. We'll help all we can.
Sure.
Bad night.
Yeah. Did you check by the Sperry's house, Tom?
Mm-hmm. Mother's trying to get a little sleep. Father's still sitting up. There he is, by the window.
Yeah.
This is the Griswold home.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. They're going to ask questions. What are we going to tell them?
I don't know.
I could be all right. Kids do funny things sometimes.
Maybe, but they don't murder their pet dog. Like a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer, the police officer comes to realize that there's only so much that can be learned from his books. Time and experience make up the rest. The police manual contains no stock answers for the grieving wife who has just lost a husband in an auto accident, no firm but polite reply to the belligerent motorist handed a traffic tag, no words of reassurance for distraught parents of missing girls, ages 11 and 7. Whether it's trapping criminals or comforting parents, you find the right answer the hard way. There isn't any other way. We sat and talked with the Griswolds for a full hour. We didn't tell them about the dog or the bag of groceries. Until the fate of the two little girls was definitely decided, we figured giving them the information would serve no purpose except to add to their worries. 5 minutes past 5 a.m., almost a full hour until daylight, was still raining.
George, maybe the officers would like some breakfast before they leave.
No, thank you kindly, Miss Griswold. We had some sandwiches about an hour ago.
Sure, I can't fix you something. It's no trouble.
No, sir. Thanks anyway. Thanks.
Terrible night. Rain.
Now, Helen, just a little while longer. We'll find the girls. It'll be daylight soon.
Mrs. Griswold, some of your neighbors tell us that there were two strangers here in the neighborhood this afternoon.
Yes, but that was earlier. Mrs. Nelson next door and I were talking about it. One was a gardener looking for work. The other one was selling books.
What time were they around, ma'am?
Book salesman was here about noon. The gardener, about 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. How is your daughter about strangers? Does she make friends easily?
No, not at all. Thelma's very careful about that. She'd never go with a stranger, I'm sure of it.
Why do you ask that question, Sergeant? Have you found out something?
No, sir. No, we haven't. It's just a routine check, that's all.
Can't understand it. And girls. Out in all this rain, something must have happened. I know.
Now, Helen, you've been doing fine. Don't let down now.
Joe. Chief Brown's car just pulled up outside.
Thanks, sir. Ben?
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Griswold, Ms. Griswold.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Let me show you the door.
We'll meet at the end of Sanchez Drive, Mr. Griswold, about 6 a.m. Should be light enough by then.
Oh, all right. Oh, Sergeant, there is a chance, isn't there? The girls are all right.
There's a good chance. You try not to worry. Come on, Ben. Press me. Tom, you want to check with Barker again and see if any of his men have a line on the two men here in the neighborhood yet?
Right.
If you want us, we'll be in Thad Brown's car.
Right, Sergeant.
What time you got, Joe?
20 to 6. It's getting light now.
Yeah. Let's get out of this rain.
Gentlemen, you look a little wet.
I could stand a dry pair of shoes.
Still no trace of the kids?
You heard about the dog and the bag of groceries.
Yeah. Nothing else since then?
No. It'll be light in a couple of minutes, and we can start searching the hills again.
I ordered up another detail of men to help. They're parked up on Sanchez Drive. Captain Elliott's with them.
Good. We can use all the help we can get. That's rough terrain. There's a lot of ground to cover up there.
Yes, you talked to everybody in the neighborhood.
Yeah, parents, too.
They help you much?
Well, they told us there were two strangers in the neighborhood before the girls disappeared. We're having them checked out.
Yeah.
Griswold thinks the kids would be safe on that count. Says his daughter's afraid of strangers, never goes near them.
Mm-hmm. How much area did you cover in the hills last night?
About a full mile, would you say, Ben? Mm-hmm. Starting from Sanchez Drive, straight back into the brush.
It wasn't too thorough. Not enough men, not enough light.
Well, you got plenty of both right now.
10 minutes past 6 a.m., Tuesday, October 28th. The search of the Sunset Hills area was resumed. 150 officers spread out over a 2-square-mile area with orders to probe every foot of ground. With them were almost 50 volunteers from the neighborhood. The rain settled to a cold, steady downpour. The mud was ankle-deep. 8:30 a.m., no sign of the missing youngsters. 10:30, still no sign. The search went on. A neighborhood restaurant owner sent out 5-gallon jugs of hot coffee for members of the searching party. After 6 continuous hours combing the hill, still no results. Chief Brown, Ben, and I went to the car for a cup of coffee and a cigarette.
It's got me beat. Those kids wanted off. They had to come in this direction.
Well, they couldn't have headed toward town. Somebody would have noticed them, sure.
Yeah. No leads at all on that APB you sent out?
Two. They both fizzled.
The youngster's up in those hills someplace. Gotta be. Are you two ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Sure doesn't figure. 2 square miles. We've been over it twice.
And go over it again. Find them.
Thelma Griswold, age 11. Barbara Sperry, age 7. Tuesday, October 28th, 2 p.m. They were still missing. Another detail of men from Metropolitan Division were dispatched to aid in the hunt. The daily newspapers played the story across the front page. Wire services bulletined the news across the country. Radio newscasters covered the story at the scene. On South Peoria Street, the two mothers sat in their homes and waited. The search went on. It stopped raining.
Did you cover that patch of underbrush over there, Joe?
Yeah. Watch it.
Yeah. I'm tired.
Oh, yeah. Let's swing up this way.
All right.
Anything?
No, nothing.
All right, come on. Almost 2:30.
Yeah, too much coffee, sour stomach.
Me too. You got a cigarette, I'm out.
Oh, here.
Thanks.
Riley! Romero! Come on down!
Preston, what do you got? What is it?
They found him! They found the kid!
Come on. Watch it, Ben. Bad spot here.
Yeah, it's slippery.
Thelma Griswold had brown hair and brown eyes, about 4 feet 6 inches tall. She had a bunch of wildflowers in her hands. Barbara Sperry had blonde hair and blue eyes. She held a bunch of wildflowers, too.
Friday?
Chief? Who found them?
Jemerson, some of the neighbors.
Dear God.
Preston.
Yes, sir?
Get something and cover him up.
Yes, sir.
Come on.
Yeah.
Been a cop 32 years. I've never seen anything like that. I hope I never do again.
Must have been a maniac. Had to be.
The lowest kind, depraved.
Anybody call the crime lab?
Yeah, the area's been cleared.
Family's been notified?
Not yet. I'll have to tell them. Do you want to come along?
No, that wouldn't be any good.
2 lives, what can you say?
Whoever did it ran up a big bill.
They're going to pay it.
Listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action. Now listen to these authentic reports about Fatima cigarettes.
Sales reports show that Fatima has more than doubled its smokers from coast to coast.
Smokers' reports give the actual reason for this astonishing gain.
Hear what Mr. W.B. Williams of New York has to say about Fatima.
I like its even mildness, no irritation. There's something about the taste of Fatima that doesn't seem to be in any other cigarette.
In the words of Miss Marie Blacker of Chicago...
My friends are switching to Fatima, too. It's much the best of long cigarettes.
Listen to this statement by Miss Cecilia Marr of Los Angeles.
I like Fatima best. It's so mild and has a wonderful flavor.
Yes, from all reports, Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
Enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
Five minutes after the bodies were discovered, the hunt for the psychopathic killer was underway. Lee Jones and his crew from the crime lab arrived and took pictures of everything that could possibly have a bearing on the crime. Physical evidence was hard to find. The heavy rain had destroyed any possible chance there might have been of finding footprints. When the crew from the crime lab was finished, the coroner arrived and took the bodies to the county morgue for autopsy. An immediate roundup of all known sexual psychopaths in the area was ordered. They were taken into homicide for questioning. So were the people from the South Peoria Street neighborhood whom we had talked with previously. The questioning went on all through the night. Together with a half a dozen officers from homicide detail, we narrowed down the field. Wednesday, October 29th, 7 a.m., we checked in with Chief of Detectives Thad Brown.
Gentlemen, you must be tired.
Got a few hours sleep last night. Could use a few more.
Sorry, we have to keep moving on this.
Did you see the papers this morning?
Yeah, they're like everybody else, crying too late. Someday people are going to learn you don't fool with these degenerates. You take precautions or you get the consequences. There's no in-between.
There's usual talk going around town. It's supposed to be all our fault, letting the psychos run loose.
No, we don't make the laws. We enforce them. Until we get something to work with, laws with teeth in them, these atrocities are going
to
go on.
Nobody seems to care. We pick them up, they serve a few days, pay a fine, and they waltz out of here. Nobody cares.
Sure, pity them. Don't cure them. Nature played a trick on them. Feel sorry for them until they kill a kid. It's not a firm law to cover them as they are. We have to wait till they murder somebody.
We got a better law for mad dogs. We don't let them run loose till they bite somebody.
Those two little girls ought to prove something. How are the parents making out?
What you might expect. Shocked, hysterics. Excuse me. Brown speaking.
Who?
Send him in. Chandler, they finished questioning that bunch we brought in yesterday.
Oh, Chief. Ben, Joe.
How many possibles, Glenn?
None. Four we had left established airtight alibis. We checked their registrations, gave them their releases.
Where does that leave us?
We start from scratch.
I don't think so, Chief.
You got a hunch?
A little better than that, Joe. I'm sold.
What do you mean?
You said the parents told you the little girls were afraid of strangers, wouldn't go near them.
Yeah, try.
We got the same reactions from some of the neighbors we talked to day before yesterday.
Yeah?
Now we find out that all the known psychos in the area are clear, perfect alibis.
Well, then you figure the killer couldn't have been a stranger to the little girls.
That's right. There were only two strangers in the whole neighborhood the day the girls disappeared, the gardener and the salesman, and both of them have been checked and cleared.
Mm-hmm.
As far as we know, the little girls wouldn't have gone that far up in the hills alone of their own accord, and they wouldn't have gone with a stranger. They had to be lured there and by someone they knew.
Any ideas?
Could have been one of the neighbors.
No, we checked every possible out there, Glenn. We questioned them a half a dozen times.
So have I. There's one that might fit.
Who's that?
Claude Jimerson.
Glenn Chandler had been a veteran homicide officer before Ben or I joined the department. He was tall, quiet, and reserved. He had a good reason for everything he did, for everything he thought. The three of us sat down and tried to put the pieces together. Number one, Chandler uncovered a point that Ben and I had missed completely. Jimerson and his wife were not close friends of either the Sperry family or the Griswolds. For a near stranger, he showed an extraordinary interest in the welfare of the children after they disappeared. Number two, Ben and I discovered that Jimerson's wife had an 8-year-old boy by a previous marriage. The child did not live with them. Mrs. Jimerson told Chandler that her husband had been cruel to the boy. She refused to elaborate. Number three, Jimerson was the last person to see the children alive. Number four, the bodies of the children had been well hidden in the underbrush. Jimerson found them. Number five, Jimerson had bent over backwards to make friends with the investigating officers right from the start. As any veteran officer can tell you, that's not the usual attitude. At 8:30 a.m., Chandler, Ben, and I left the office. We spent the day digging back 15 years into Jimerson's life. We got back to the office just after midnight. Thursday, October 30th, 10 a.m., we checked in.
Okay, Joe, all ready.
Thanks. Come on, Ben.
Yeah.
Good morning, Mr. Jimerson.
Oh, how are you, Sergeant? Glad to see you.
Sit down. Sorry to bother you again.
Not at all. Glad to help. Anything new turn up?
Did you kill those two little girls?
That's a funny thing to ask. Of course not. You know that.
We ask everybody the same thing. Hope you're not offended.
Oh, you kind of surprised me. I didn't know.
Did you kill those little girls?
I don't understand. I told you no. Of course not.
It's a stock question. Routine. Did you kill them?
Now, look, Sergeant, how many times do I have to tell you no?
Sorry. You don't have any children, do you?
No, we don't.
No stepchildren?
No. Why?
Before you moved out to South Peoria Street, you and the wife lived out in West L.A., didn't you? Kelton Avenue?
Well, yes. How'd you know?
You recall a Mary Gibbs out there?
Gibbs? No.
6-year-old girl. You were charged with molesting her. That was back in 1944.
They were crazy. They never proved it.
Before Kelton Avenue, you lived in Santa Monica. On 10th Street. Is that right?
Yes.
It was an 8-year-old girl. Donna Honrath.
That kid lied, too. She asked me to fix her doll buggy. I never went near her.
What about your stepson? Why isn't he living with you? Why did your wife send him to live with her sister?
Amy's crazy. I never harmed the boy. We didn't get along, that's all. It got on my nerves.
You've had 4 jobs in the past 5 years. What were they?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You were a janitor at a grammar school down the south end of town, then a gardener at a children's playground. Then you were a shoe salesman, children's shoes. Then you worked at another grammar school.
What does all this mean, anyway? What are you getting at?
Have you ever been in jail?
Once. 6 months, there was some trouble.
What kind of trouble?
I didn't know what I was doing. I was drinking. I didn't mean to bother the kid. Well?
That's all, Jimerson. Routine questioning. You can go now.
Oh, thanks. I hope you haven't got the wrong idea about me. I like children, that's all.
Sure. Thanks for coming in.
Well, not at all, Sergeant. Any thing I can do to help. Well, goodbye.
Say, Jimerson, I almost forgot. There is one thing.
Oh?
Since you're the one who found the little girls, we'll have to have you identify the bodies.
It won't take long. Morgue's just across the street, up the bluff.
Well, I'd like to help you, but I got an appointment.
All you have to do is look at them. Won't take you long. Come on, let's go.
I'd like to help, Sergeant, but I don't take these things well. I get sick.
We'll make it fast. Out this way.
Raining again.
I'm sorry, Sergeant. I don't think I better go.
Just identify them, that's all. Won't take a minute.
And maybe if we had a drink before we went in. You can have one after.
And watch it. There's heavy traffic.
Yeah, lights change. We'll have to wait. I need a drink. I can't go in that place without a drink.
You'll be all right. Okay, let's go. Morgue's up this way.
I can't look at him. I get sick. Don't make me.
Nothing to it. You'll see.
Here we are. We're down the driveway. It's a shortcut.
This way.
Hi, Joe. Can I help you?
Yeah, Archie. Those little girls, Thelma Griswold, Barbara Sperry.
Oh, yeah. This way.
Please.
Right here, Joe. Yeah, Thelma Griswold.
Uncover. Jimerson?
Yeah. Thelma.
This one?
Barbara. Little one.
You killed him, didn't you?
The dog jumped at me. She started to yell. Put my hand over her mouth. Then the other kid. I hit them. Too hard. They cried.
Joe?
That's all.
All right. Huh?
Let's go.
It wasn't my fault. I like kids. They didn't understand.
Neither do I, mister. Come on.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On March 18th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
It's amazing how many long cigarette smokers are changing to Fatima. Here's the actual report.
From coast to coast, Fatima has more than doubled its smokers.
Yes, more and more smokers every day are discovering that Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
Smokers find Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette.
They find that Fatima is extra mild because it's the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make it extra mild.
Enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself. Best of all long cigarettes. Claude Willis Jimerson was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. On April 23rd at 10 a.m., he was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton.
You're tuned for the stars on NBC. To hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. 16 persons have been robbed and beaten senseless. The victims describe the assailant as a tall, beautiful woman. Your job, stop her.
If you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima. Fatima is the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild. And that's why Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette. That's why Fatima has more than doubled its smokers coast to coast. So, if you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima. Ladies and gentlemen, next week marks the beginning of National Crime Prevention Week, sponsored by your local police department. These 7 days are set aside to call your attention to the fact that your police officer, to better ensure the safety of your community, relies on the cooperation of the individual citizen. We feel that crime prevention should be observed not 7, but 365 days a year.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, October 3rd. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. We were on the way over from the city hall, and it was 6:55 p.m. when we got to the county hospital, Ward 9800, room 12.
This way, gentlemen. The third bed.
Thank you.
Here we are. Please try not to excite him, Sergeant. He's had a pretty hard time.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Make your visit as brief as possible.
We will. Thanks.
Mr. Maloney, how are you feeling?
Not so good. You fellas doctors?
No, sir. Police officers. This is Sergeant Romero. My name's Friday. Robbery detail.
Oh. Find out anything yet?
Still checking, Mr. Maloney. We'd like to have you tell us exactly what happened night before that.
Well, she sure had me fooled. That's all I can say.
You're not the first one. 15 others ahead of you. Would you tell us what happened?
Well, I left the shop a little after midnight, and I started to drive home at Central Avenue.
You work at Maloney's Steakhouse down on South Commercial, isn't that right?
Yes, sir. My uncle owns the place. His name's J. Brown Maloney. He knows a lot of cops. You know him?
We met him this afternoon. Could you tell us what happened after you left work?
Well, I started to drive home out Central Avenue. I guess it must have been around 18th Street. Would you push it, Bill, up a little bit?
Yes, sir. I'll get it here.
How's that? Thanks. I pulled up for the arterial. I saw this gal standing on the corner. She was hitchhiking.
Do you remember what she looked like, how she was dressed?
Well, you know, kind of flashy, but nice clothes. Good-looking dame. Tall, long blonde hair. Beautiful eyes.
And you're sure about the color of her hair?
Yeah, it was blonde.
And you offered her a ride?
I didn't think there was anything wrong in it. I'm a married man, you know. I didn't think there was anything wrong.
What happened then?
Well, she got in a car and we drove off. We talked a while and she pulled a gun on me. Told me to drive up an alley.
Where was that? Do you remember?
Around 32nd Street, 32nd and Central.
And then what?
She took my wallet, watch, car keys, everything I had.
Mm-hmm.
And she made me get out of the car, lay down on the street. I felt to shove that gun again. Can you fix that pillow?
Yeah, you bet. Just lie still. Yeah. There you are.
I felt to shove that gun against me, and then she pulled the trigger, I guess. That's all I remember.
You don't recall her slugging you?
Must have happened after she shot me. Her face looks pretty bad, huh?
You'll be all right, Mr. Maloney. You think you'd recognize the girl if you saw her again?
I sure would. Nice looking, you know. Tall, blonde, beautiful shape. Doesn't figure, does it?
What's that?
She'd make more money on the stage than she would rolling guys like me. Must be crazy.
Maybe. Would you look at these mug shots, Mr. Maloney, and see if any of these look like her?
Let's see.
Yeah. This one?
No.
What this one here?
No, let's see. No.
All right. How about this one?
No, she was better looking.
Well, here's the last one.
I don't know. This might be her. The hair was fixed right. Maybe a little more makeup. I'm not sure.
All right, Mr. Maloney. Thank you.
We'll be back to see you in a day or so when you're feeling better.
Okay. Say, my name won't be in the papers, will it?
No, sir, not unless you give it to him.
I was just wondering. A wife might not understand giving a girl a ride, you know?
Yes, sir, we know.
Well, thank you, Mr. Maloney. We'll be checking back with you later on.
Okay, officers. I hope you get a line on that dame.
We're going to try. Goodbye.
Sure messed up, isn't it?
Yeah. That dame's got some other motive besides money.
Psycho. Some kind of a sadist, maybe.
Yeah.
Find out what you wanted, Sergeant.
Yes, we did. Thanks, nurse. What'd the doctor say about Maloney? Is he going to be all right?
Well, he had a severe beating, but he'll get over that all right. It's the bullet wound in the back.
He'll recover, won't he?
The bullet shattered part of the spinal cord. There was nothing the doctor could do.
Yeah?
Paraplegia. He'll never walk again.
We left the county hospital, went back to the office, and got out a local broadcast for the woman whose mugshot Maloney had partially identified. Her name was Beverly Allen. She had a record of 3 arrests and 1 conviction of 240 PC, assault and battery. After we checked in the office, we went across the street to the crime lab. Lee Jones had already examined the bullet taken from Maloney's spine and the cartridge casing found at the scene of the shooting. Both of them bore the same markings as those which had wounded the 2 previous victims. From the striations, the gun had been previously identified as a .45 Colt. Maloney's car was examined. We found nothing. We went back to the city hall and checked in at the stats office. It was 8:35 p.m.
Hi, Ethel. Make that run for us, yeah?
Just a minute, Sergeant.
How you coming, Ethel?
Fine, here. Same old run. I'm back 7 years on this one.
Yeah, that's right. Did you get any more names?
A few. Let me check the list for you.
All right.
You wanted the names and DR numbers on Caucasian women. 5 feet to 5 feet 8, 115 to 130 pounds, 20 to 30 years, blonde or brunette, assault and battery, M.O., hitchhikes, rides, and robs drivers, uses gun.
Yeah, that's it.
Here's what the machine turned out, 19 of them.
Good.
Here are the names. The DR numbers opposite each one.
Fine. Very new name?
A few more than the last time. Anything else for tonight?
No, that's it for now. Thanks a lot, Ethel. Let's go. Bad start.
How's that?
17 of these names we checked and cleared already.
And the other two?
Well, one's Catherine Collins. The other one's Beverly Allen. She might tie in.
We got nothing else to go on.
You want to get to the record bureau and pull the packages on these two names?
Yeah, okay.
I'll check robbery and see if we have any calls, huh?
Right, Joe.
Okay. Hi, Captain. Any calls for us?
Just one. Thad Brown wants to see you.
Oh? Bad mood?
Kind of. Wants me, too. Let's go. Fella Maloney tell you anything?
Nothing that helped much. Same old story. No reports on that broadcast we put out for that Beverly Allen?
Not yet, no. You banking on it?
It's first lead in 16 nights.
Hmm. Here we are.
Walker, Friday, come in.
How are you, boss?
Sit down.
Thank you.
A look.
Woman bandit gets 16th victim. Beautiful hold-up queen, robs, shoots, restaurant worker. Yeah?
It's on the editorial page, too. Something else. Memo from the chief. Here, letter from the Downtown Citizens Committee. Another one, Civic Club. They all want answers.
Men are doing all they can, Chief. We got two other teams besides Friday and Romero working the case. Special squad from Metropolitan Division. They're on it, too.
I don't care what we've done. We got to do more. 16 nights, 16 robberies, and 3 shootings. 3 victims still in the hospital. When do we blow the whistle on her?
We've checked out every possible lead, Chief. We got a want out on one suspect. We're checking out another one. Talk to that man Maloney, the one she got last night.
Well, what did he tell you?
Well, not much more than the other 15 that she took. Descriptions still don't match in one respect.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, in 10 of the 16 cases we've had reported, the victims tagged the girl hitchhiker as a blonde, long hair. 4 of them say she was a brunette with a short hairdo. 2 of them tell us that the girl had red hair, long.
She's using wigs, that's what we figured. Checked every place in town where she could have rented or bought them. No leads.
What about some of the bigger supply houses out of town?
We've started in checking them. It'll take a little time.
Then you've got practically nothing on the woman.
Same gun, .45 Colt. Lee Jones examined the bullet they took out of Maloney's spine.
Hmm. How's he doing?
Not good. The bullet smashed his spinal cord. His legs are paralyzed.
When do we stop her? Yeah? Romero?
Hi, Chief. Captain?
What have you got?
Pulled the packages on 2 possibles in this woman holdup thing. It's no good, Joe.
Why not? What about that Allen dame?
Jail in Kansas City. I called him. Been in for a month.
And the other one?
Catherine Collins. I checked Seattle. Been in the hospital up there for the past 3 months in TB ward.
Where does that leave you, Friday?
Right back where we started. No leads and no suspects.
All right, Walker. Starting tonight, we cover every street and alley in the central area until we get that woman. We'll order up more men and more detectives from the Metropolitan Division.
Right, Chief.
Get out more decoy cars. Have the area covered from sundown till sunrise until further notice. Get that woman.
Right. Come on, Joe.
Yeah. Hot shot.
I get it.
211 shooting at Gatewood and Cameron. 211 shooting at Gatewood and Cameron.
Let's go. The name on his driver's license said William Gillespie. We found him 50 feet from the corner of Gatewood Alley and Cameron Street. His face and head bore the marks of a vicious beating. There was a single bullet wound in his left shoulder. He was conscious when we arrived. Chief of Detectives Brown, Captain Walker, and Ben checked the area for physical evidence. I spoke briefly with the victim before he was placed on a stretcher and carried to the ambulance. On the way, he lapsed into unconsciousness. I went over to where Ben was standing with Chief Brown and Captain Walker.
Take a look, Joe. Captain found over there near the lamppost.
Yeah.
.45 shell casing, same as the others.
How's Gillespie, Friday?
Doc says he'll be all right. Badly beaten.
Tough dame. She really works him over.
Wonder what makes a woman do things like this.
What makes a man do it? William Gillespie was taken to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. The shell casing, which we had found at the scene, was taken to Lee Jones at the crime lab for examination. It compared with the others. Jones confirmed that the markings on the bullet which had wounded Gillespie matched those on the bullet which had been taken from Maloney's back. Both bullets had been fired from the same gun. The dragnet operation for the woman bandit went on. The men in the special detail covered every street and alley in the central area from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. the following morning. During the next 5 days, 11 suspects were picked up and brought in for questioning and then released after the victims failed to identify any of them.
Well, at least we got her stopped temporarily. She hasn't pulled a caper for almost a week.
Yeah, that doesn't bring us any closer to her. I don't know about you, but it's got me beat. 17 jobs, and she's as free today as she was before she started.
Joe, Ben, what'd you find?
Nothing. The last 4 women we questioned were clear.
What about the other men on the case, Ed? Did they get anything?
Baxter and Olson are down at the record bureau. Be in a minute. They've been out talking to some of the victims again. Mm-hmm. Tough one.
I've been thinking. How about a composite picture? We got enough to work with?
Artist in the crime lab's working up a couple of sketches now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guesswork.
What about the descriptions of the clothes the girl wears? Anything there we could start on?
No, other than the fact that she wears flashy clothes.
Hi, Olson.
Hi.
Any luck?
Not much. None of the victims have a very good idea what the dame looked like. Tall, good-looking, nice figure, that's all.
Nothing out of the ordinary, huh?
Well, some of them said she had kind of an unusual voice. Soft, low. That's about all they could remember.
It's not much help.
She's been described in 3 different outfits, is that right?
Yeah, green dress with a pink coat, white dress, dark blue jacket, bright red sweater, and a brown skirt. Always carries a dark brown alligator handbag. Shoes to match. No hat.
Not much of a wardrobe, is it?
Maybe that's why she took up robbery.
Now, look, let's get on this thing. We've been chasing this woman for almost a month now, and she's still got the run of the town. How long's it going to take us?
If we only had a lead that was worth something.
Find it. It's there someplace. I've never reached a thief yet without digging for him.
Now I'll get it. Robbery, Olson. Yeah. Right, Andy. I'll tell him. Anderson and burglar Joe wants to see you and Ben.
Thanks. Captain?
That's all.
Come on, Ben.
Yeah. I'd like a day off, wouldn't you? We'll get one when we get this dame.
Right, Ed.
This thing isn't doing much for the skipper.
It's not doing much for our time off either, is it?
That fire department's got the racket. 24 hours on, 24 off.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they get 3 days off in a row.
That's what you keep telling me. Here we are.
Joe, Ben.
Andy, what do you got?
Checking back on a job out in Hollywood. Heard you were having troubles, came across this thing, thought it might help you out.
What's that, Ann?
One of the picture studios had a burglary about a month ago. Thief got in the wardrobe department, then next door in a makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. Here's some of the stuff taken, dress, coat. Oh, here, you can read it.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Red sweater, brown skirt.
Hey, look down here, Joe.
Where?
Right here.
Oh, yeah. Took two makeup kits and four wigs.
Two blondes, one redhead, one brunette. That's it.
Any leads on this job?
Not so far, no. We got one thing to go on, a single footprint, size 9.
Hmm. Pretty large size for a woman.
I didn't say it was a woman. Print was made by a man's shoe.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima. It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
Those words are echoing across the country. Yes, Fatima has more than doubled its sales because Fatima smokers are telling their friends it's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
And why?
Because Fatima contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild.
So for a much different, much better flavor and aroma, smoke Fatima.
One of the most popular misconceptions of the working detective as offered by the fiction writers is the picture of a man with amazing talents for detecting evidence, analyzing human behavior and motives, and then, almost as if by magic, fitting all the pieces together to form the solution to the crime. The real-life picture is a little different. The working detective has a job. In a sense, it's a practical and down-to-earth job as baking bread or practicing law. It's his job to protect citizens and apprehend criminals, and it's a job he doesn't do alone. To assist him in collecting and analyzing evidence, he has the aid of the crime laboratory. To help him identify oddities in suspects or possible suspects, he has the record bureau, latent fingerprints, the statistician's office, the ballistics department, a battery of men and machines to aid him in reaching conclusions based on fact. Tuesday, October 9th, 9 p.m. For the past 8 hours, Thaxter and Olson from robbery and Ben and I had been requesting all of the 16 victims of the woman bandit. We asked them one question. Could their assailant possibly have been a man dressed as a woman? The majority didn't think so. Those that did weren't very sure. We followed the lead through. At 9:25 p.m., we checked in and headed down the hall for the stats office.
Do you think it was a man dressed as a woman?
I don't know.
One male footprint, pretty slim odds.
Maybe the machines here can tell us.
Hello, Sergeant.
Back again, Ethel. Can you make a run for us tonight?
9:25. Sure, I think so.
Now here's the dope right here.
I'm going to try another angle, hmm?
Yeah.
Let's see. Male protrusions. About 5 feet 8 or 9, 130, 235 pounds, feminine features, size 9 shoe, impersonating women, robbery, and assault.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Arm, 45 automatic. M.O. Hitchhikes, rides, and robs drivers.
How soon do you think you can have it for us?
Well, make the run on the collator. Have to punch up the master first with all this information and let the machine work the cards. I don't think I'll have it for you much before 11, that all right?
Fine, yeah.
We'll check back a little before 11 then, huh?
They'll be ready.
Good. Come on, Ben. Did you call your wife after dinner?
Yeah. Wish I hadn't. She's mad as a hornet.
What's the matter?
Kid's having a birthday party tomorrow, and I forgot to order the cake.
What's she going to do for the party? Bake one?
She have to.
Then she pulled this gun on me and told me to stop the car. Well, I'm telling you, Captain, I just grabbed that gun and slapped that kid just as hard as
I could.
Hold
it just a minute, will you, please, Collins? This man's name is Emil Collins. Mr. Collins is Sergeant Friday, Sergeant Romero.
How are you?
How do you do?
How are you?
I was just telling the captain here, I'm down here on a vacation. I'm from Sacramento, South Sacramento. And I was driving down your Figueroa Street about half an hour ago and picked up this girl hitching a ride, and she tried to rob me.
Collins took the gun away from her, subdued the girl, and brought her in.
Where is she now?
Interrogation room. Thaxter and Olson are with her.
The description match?
Not too close.
Sounds like you didn't have too much trouble with her, Mr. Collins.
Well, now that I come to think of it, maybe I didn't. When she pointed that gun, I just grabbed for it and slapped her as hard as I could. Sure took the starch out of her.
Who is the girl? Any identification?
None. Thaxter and Olson haven't been able to get anything out of her. You want to try?
Sure.
What do you think, Skipper?
You tell me. See if you can make her talk. I'll have a stenographer take Mr. Collins' report.
Okay. Glad to meet you, Mr. Collins.
That's a pleasure. I'm only down here for a vacation, but if you need me, just call.
You bet we will. Thanks.
How do you figure that one?
I don't know. Let's see what the girl has to say. Olson?
Joe, I want to talk to you before you go in.
Sure.
Did you finally get her to talk?
Well, Thaxter did. Pretty sure she's not the one we're after.
What's her story?
Said she read about this woman bandit in the paper, decided to try her hand at it, needed money.
Yeah?
Claims her husband left her. She's pregnant, needs the dough for a hospital.
She live here?
Up the coast, Monterey. Got in town 4 days ago, staying at the YWCA. We checked there. She's not lying.
You call Monterey?
Yeah, they confirmed it. She left there last Wednesday night. She's not the one.
Where do we go from here?
You'll take care of having her booked, huh, Olson?
Yeah, as soon as we get a station.
Okay, fine.
Friday, Ben, this way. Hustle it. You too, Olson.
What do you got, Ed?
4th and Lucas, 211 shooting. Let's go.
Any detail?
Yeah. A tall blonde with a gun. Come on.
The woman bandit's 18th victim was a truck driver. His name, Harry Reese. His story differed a little from that of the first victim. The woman was hitchhiking near Alvarado and 3rd Street. He gave her a ride. She robbed him at gunpoint, slugged him, and then shot him through the left shoulder. He described her as tall, blonde, attractive, and well-dressed.
Guess I should have known better. Remember reading about the dame in the papers.
You're sure that the person who held you up was a woman?
Hmm? I don't get you.
What he means is you don't think it could have been a man dressed like a woman.
Oh, no, I'm sure of that. No guy ever looked that good to me.
All right, Mr. Reese. We'll check with you later at the hospital.
Okay.
But then, let's get through, will you?
We're keeping that truck cleared?
Yeah, Holson's got a couple of men watching it. He's going over it.
Same old story. Just another version.
Don't you think she's spreading it pretty thin? Her luck can't last forever.
It's got me beat, how she always manages to disappear without a trace.
Yeah. Now, Ben, this way, over here.
Yeah, okay.
What do you got?
Better hustle it. 4 blocks down on Colfax is shooting. Just came in on the car radio.
Let's go. Slide over, Joe.
Yeah. You hit the sign, Ben.
Yeah.
The crowd, watch him.
All right, Skipper.
Is that all that came over, Ben? A shooting?
All they said, see the cab driver, ambulance shooting.
This is working real fast.
What's the address for now?
3rd and East Flower Hotel. Hold on. This is it coming up.
Should be to the right here. Yeah, take a right. That must be it up ahead. I can't see. What's that sign say?
Edgemar Hotel for young women.
Here's a cab driver.
Lovin' is right over here.
Hey, looks like blood stains to me here all over the sidewalk.
Yeah, I guess it couldn't have happened any more than 5 or 10 minutes ago. I had this fare. See, picked her up at 4th and Bixel, and I drove her here. She paid the fare and got out.
Yeah, go on.
I was about halfway down the block when I heard a shot. At least it sounded like one. And when I looked back, this dame was down on one knee near the door to the hotel here, and by the time I backed up here, she was gone.
And you noticed the blood, huh?
That's right, yeah. I figured I better call somebody.
Can you tell us what the girl looked like?
Oh, not bad at all. Blonde, tall, pretty girl, nervous.
But you didn't see where she went?
No, but I didn't.
I'll get the driver's name and address. Joe, you and Ben, see if you can follow that trail. Stuff's all over the place.
Right. Over this way, Ben.
Yeah. It's not hard to follow.
Down this alley between the buildings.
How does this figure?
I don't know. Let's find out. Here we go. All the way back here. You got your flashlight?
Yeah. Here it is.
Yeah, this way. Come on.
This must be the rear of the hotel.
Well, look. The stains lead over this way to the back door here.
Let me try.
Okay, inside.
Still following?
Yeah. Careful. Up these stairs.
Yeah. Second floor. What's the matter? Did you lose him?
Yeah. Just a minute.
See anything?
Yeah. Stains lead on up the stairs here. Let's go.
I just happened to think. This is a woman's hotel.
And they ought to keep the back door closed. Come on. Third floor, let's hold it.
What is it?
Thought I saw a door open down the hall.
Did you see anybody?
No. Let's go. This way.
It's an easy trail to follow.
Now, this is it. They stop here at this door.
That
doesn't sound like a woman.
Yeah. You ready?
Here, try the door first. Yeah. Easy.
It's locked.
All right, come on. Together now. Let's hit it.
Yeah, all right.
Watch it, Joe. Watch it. All right, you.
I got the gun.
Yeah. Well, we found what we came for. Look.
Still got the clothes on. Blonde wig, makeup, everything.
Please, help me. My leg. Call an ambulance.
It's on the way. Take it easy.
Have a look, Joe. The wigs, full makeup kit, clothes, living in a woman's hotel. The worst.
It was an accident. You never would have got me. I dropped the gun. It went off. You never would have got me.
Yeah, that's right, mister.
It was an accident.
You better get the boss in here. I'll stay with Glamour Boy.
Yeah, okay.
And Ben.
Yeah?
Leave the door open, will you? House rules.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On January 14th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 79, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
It's amazing how many long cigarette smokers are changing to Fatima. Here is the actual report.
From coast to coast, Fatima has more than doubled its smokers.
Yes, more and more smokers every day are discovering that Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes.
Smokers find Fatima has a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette.
They find that Fatima is extra mild because it's the long cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make it extra mild.
Enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself. Best of all long cigarettes.
The welfare and security of your home and your family is a subject of national importance next week, National Crime Prevention Week. The efficiency of your local police department is dependent upon your attitude toward your police officer. Not just 1 week out of the year, but every day in the year. He wants your cooperation. He needs your cooperation for the enforcement of your laws. Help your officer to help you to live in a peaceful, orderly community. National Crime Prevention Week costs you nothing, just your cooperation.
James Harold Sutter, alias the Bandit Queen, was tried and convicted on several counts of assault with attempt to commit murder and robbery of the first degree. He was sentenced to the term prescribed by law. While serving his time in the state penitentiary, he was stabbed to death by another inmate. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, the best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet from Los Angeles.
Hear Morton Downey tonight on NBC.
You've been listening to Dragnet at 1001 Radio Crime Solvers. Give us a review if you have a chance, or mention it Spotify. And all we ask you is share our shows with friends. Take care, and we'll be back soon.